Hope everybody had a very good Christmas. Stay sober and you'll have a better one next year. That keeps getting gooder and gooder. I was talking to Kevin. He said, was Santa Claus good to me? My bride gave me a beehive for Christmas. And I thought, you talk about a gift that keeps on giving, you know? It's like my kids are thinking, yeah, watch this. I mean, this has got epic fail written all over it. But anyway, step 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. That's the topic for the evening. And I like all the steps, and I don't think one is more important than the other. But step 9, it's one of my favorites. There's a Tai Chi principle that says the only way to completely destroy an enemy is to make them a friend. And I believe how you do that, step 9 amends, is the only way that I know of to turn an enemy into a friend and transformation. Because I've seen it happen so many times. Not always, and you can't count on it, but boy, I'll tell you what, it probably happens more often than not. This is my personal story, as all these steps are. I'm not an expert on this, and it's not a how-to on the 12 steps. And my story starts a while ago, and I was only sober a little while when I started to really comprehend how much damage I did to the people that loved me the most. Those were the people I hurt the most. And I'm talking for myself, my mother, my father, my ex-wife, and my two children, two little girls. And I ended up being a single parent for years with them, but it worked out okay. They're still alive, and they're still... Neither one of them's in prison right now. But anyway, no, I'm just kidding. I mean, I hurt other relationships also, but not to the degree that I hurt the ones that loved me. I say this in almost all my leads, it was very expensive to love me, because I hurt people not just once that were close to me. I hurt them over and over. And I felt this tremendous remorse and guilt when, after I got sober long enough to realize how deep the damage was and how much I hurt them. And I was afraid the guilt would send me out drinking, and I was very troubled, and I wasn't able to face them because I, to be honest with you, I wasn't ready to make amends, and neither were they. And I was at a lead meeting early on, before I started leading myself, so I was less than a year sober. I heard a speaker say he made living amends to the people that loved him just by staying sober. And I liked the ring of that, living amends. And I kind of knew there was something wrong with it, but it gave me some comfort. And things did start to get better just because I wasn't drinking, because I wasn't doing the really stupid things that I did when I was drinking. And I felt some relief. And like I said, things were getting better in my life and in the people closest to me, and all around things were getting better, because I wasn't causing more damage by my drinking. And so I decided to make living amends. Now, I already told you about my sponsor, Big Jim. He's 6'7", you know. And most people didn't think he had a bad temper, but I kind of seemed to trigger that in him, and he'd veins would pop out in his head, and he'd spit and swear when he was yelling at me and stuff. And so somehow I intuitively you know, I was kind of make a living mensch, but I intuitively knew not to run that big gym, you know. But I did feel less guilty and a little better by myself. Then one day, inevitably, Big Jim, we were going to a meeting, and he asked me if I made amends yet. And I said, of course. And then I said I was making amends just by staying sober. And I knew before that was all the way out of my mouth that this was... I mean, we went through cornfields and shit when I said stuff like that to him before. You know, he'd flip out. Well, he'd been through that enough, and so did I, that he just pulled over. And I knew it was a bad mistake, and I wouldn't have done the same thing had given the similar circumstances. But let's say Jim gave me some very energetic feedback about the situation, and he said, step 9 clearly states making direct amends, and it said the whole 12 steps say nothing about making living amends. And I paraphrased that quite a bit instead of quoting him, because if I quoted him, there was a lot of unchristian words in there that my bride would be really angry by. Okay, so anyway. Trust was actually the issue. I taught people that love me the most how not to trust me, or I taught them not to trust me through being... Actually, I was consistently untrustworthy. I would steal from them, borrow, not pay them back, lose jobs, embarrass them, wreck cars that I borrowed from them, and much more. I would apologize when I got sober and turn over a new leaf, swearing I would never do it again. And I kind of covered this last week when I said, I am sorry, I won't ever do that again. I'll never drink again. I meant it. But see, I couldn't do it. I didn't have the strategy. And I went back to drinking, and I did it. And I did it over and over again until I'm sorry didn't mean anything. And even today, a lot of times it was, I'm sorry, but I was drunk. I'm sorry, but you shouldn't have lent me the car. And even today, when somebody wants to apologize to me or make amends, if they say, I'm sorry, but, as soon as the but's out of their mouth, yeah, that's the same thing. It's like, you know, in other words, they're sorry, but it was my fault. And that's what I kind of did. And the thing is, trust is a very important ingredient. And I got down here, I took notes, and it says in step 9. But actually, trust is gained in step 8 when you're getting ready to make amends and becoming willing. And how can you gain trust from the people you love the most? And I think the only way to do that is becoming trustworthy. Now, me, I was attracted to alcohol and drugs because I got that instant. This was Southern Comfort. Right now, I'd be going, oh, yeah. Say it would be instant. And the trouble is, then the pain would come later. And so, I real fortunate for me, trust is not, you know, your virginity, once you lose that, it's gone. But trust is not like that. You can get trust back. And it's not gone forever. And the thing is, I used to hate this saying, time takes time, but it took me some time to gain that trust and become trustworthy. I kind of addressed that last week in the questions when I was talking about step 8, but I'll revisit again in step 9 because it's so important. And how, you know, one of the things that probably hurt my mother the most, my mother, I think the only person I ever saw her get mad at was me. And you know, and she loved me so much, and she went to church and everything, and we were kind of a, you know, middle class blue collar family, did the right thing, and I showed up on television at night. I think I alluded to this last week. In handcuffs with a New York State trooper escorting me into the magistrates. And it showed up on the news at 6 and 11. And she was too ashamed to, after that, to go to church for a couple years. And how do you make amends for that? I'm sorry, Mom, but I was drinking. Or I'm sorry, but I, you know. And the thing is that the trust was gone because of incidents like that over and over again. It's like, I don't think they took their trust away from me. I think I beat it out of them, to be honest with you. But what I did is one day, and this was alluded to in the Living Amends, one day I didn't take a drink and I went to a meeting. And the next day, I didn't take a drink, and I went to a meeting, and I started to clean up my side of the street. I quit stealing from them. I quit wrecking cars. I quit. I kept a job. I actually started to pay back money that I'm sure they thought was gone. And I started, actually, what I started doing was the things that everybody's supposed to be doing anyway. Human beings, you know, just going to work, paying my bills, not stealing, not getting in barroom brawls and tearing the door off the town tavern. Chaz, we could tell town tavern stories, me and Chaz, for a while here. But anyway, and in time, they thought, wow, you know, Buzz hasn't hit the police blotter for a while, you know, and haven't heard about him doing anything really bizarre, you know, for a while. And he is going to work, and that's odd. All 5 days in a week, you know. But anyway, I started doing that, and they started seeing that I was doing, It was the same with my wife. By this time was gone by the time I got sober, so she didn't see that. But my kids, I kind of was struggling with raising them, and my parents were really helping me out raising them. If it wasn't for them, I don't know what I'd have done, you know. But anyway, I guess I started being a father. And they no longer, the bad stuff wasn't happening, and it didn't happen for a while. And I'm sure at first they thought, yeah, he's quit before, it'll last maybe a couple weeks, maybe a month, you know, hope it lasts 2 months. But it was longer than that. And I was also, I had a very good patient sponsor. He was my sponsor for 5 years before he died. And I drank for the first 35 months of those 5 years. So he really helped me out in the early days. And then he died and I kind of turned the other way for a while. But they did. Eventually they started to regain me, gain trust. Even my ex-wife, it was 13 years before the wound healed up enough, the animosity, that I went down to Georgia and made amends to her. 13 years. Actually, she lived with my oldest daughter for a few years. My oldest daughter's birthday she had a birthday party on the 22nd. My ex-wife was there, and we were in the same room. I mean, we're not getting back together or anything, but she gave me a hug. She was at Christmas dinner with us, as she is for many years. She's been to my house for Thanksgiving dinner and dinners we've had. Now, we're not the best of friends, but we're, you know, instead of enemies, remember that Tai Chi principle, the only way to destroy an enemy is make a friend. And I guess we are friends in a sense, because I want the best for her welfare. I've tried to help her out a few times when she had problems, not overly. I mean, obviously I'm remarried and the marriage has been over and there wasn't any romance there anyway. The wound has been healed, and it's because, one, I quit doing more harm. And to tell you the truth, before I was ready to make amends, I had to forgive her for her part in it, because I had a bunch of animosity. But anyway, and that's what I did, was I made amends to the folks closest to me first. They were the ones that I hurt repeatedly. And I made amends, and some of them forgave me quicker than the others. Right now, I think all the people closest to me have forgiven me. In fact, I've got letters of appreciation for staying sober from both my daughters. You know, it's like they're really glad that I got sober. Then after that came those that I harmed and owed restitution. And an early example was a wealthy lady who I did some carpenter work for in a house she owned, but she lived elsewhere, kind of a distance away. She gave me a checkbook to purchase tools and material to do the work for her, and I made out one check first for $5 or something like that to the bar, and I started making checks out for cash, and most of them were cashed at the Wayside Inn or Town Tavern, you know, for deposit only, for $5 and $10 at a time, until finally she closed the account and fired me. Well, I'd been sober actually a few years, and I decided to make amends to her. Now, my sponsor, Big Jim, died in this time, and the thing is, I didn't get another sponsor because I couldn't find anybody to fill his shoes. He probably had shoes about that. I don't know. He was a big man. But anyway, I didn't get... And in AA, there's a saying, if you're your own sponsor, you have an idiot for a sponsor. Well, for the next 3 years after he died, I had an idiot for a sponsor because I was my own sponsor. And anyway, so I decided to make amends to this lady, and I went up and I knocked on her door, and she opened the door, and I explained to her, and she knew I stole the money, obviously. I mean, she could have probably pressed some kind of charges, but she never did. And I asked her how much I owed her, and I really didn't have any idea how much I owed her. And she replied something like this, I don't remember exactly. She says, I'm not interested in your money. I got enough money to buy and sell you. But I'm glad you owned up to it, and I'm glad you no longer drink. You're forgiven. Now I'm busy, so I'll get along with you. And I wasn't feeling warm and fuzzy after that, you know. And I felt really bad about it. I didn't feel good, and I didn't feel forgiven. So what I did was I saved at least twice the amount of money that I thought I stole from her. And I put them in an envelope, and I got a big book, and I put the envelope on page 66 where Wilson addresses amends. And I also learned don't tell me you don't learn something in your diction. I learned this in court, that if a defendant wrote a letter to the judge and he whips out this piece of paper like I have right now, everybody stops and listens to him read it. You know, the judge, the lawyers, the prosecutor, everybody listens to him read it. So I wrote a letter, my first letter of amends. Now, by the way, I always write letters of amends, and I read it to whoever I make amends to, and then I give them a copy after I make the amends. I also walk my sponsees through this process, and I got a couple of them out there that I've done that with. So I went back to the lady I stole for the second time, armed with a letter of amends, a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and restitution money. I got out the letter, and she let me in the house, and I read it to her, and she took it serious. And it went something like this. I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the letter. But it went pretty close to this. I wish I could go back in time and not steal the money, but I cannot go back. This is the best I can do to make a wrong on my part right. Please take this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which will explain why I'm doing this, on page 66. The money is yours to do as you please. You can keep it, burn it, give it to the YMCA, or even another drunk so they do not have to steal. But please, take it for me. And then I signed it. And there was a pause, and she leafed through the money, and she took it. I was then just prompted by the Spirit, and this is also paraphrased because this wasn't written down at this time. I promise I will do my best to never get so desperate that I steal from you or anyone else. If I never drink again, I probably will never get so desperate to steal. And that was kind of off the top of my head. I really think it was prompted by the Spirit, because that really changed things, because now it was out of my mouth and I said it and I meant it. But now I was sober long enough that I wanted to keep that promise. Okay. She said I was forgiven, and I felt forgiven when I left this time. And I've seen her since, but this time it was a friend. Remember, as I said previously, step 9 is how you destroy an enemy and make a friend. You know, you can't destroy an enemy by beating them up. You just make them a bigger enemy. They're going to hit you over the head with a 2x4 when you ain't looking. But anyway, when you make them a friend, you don't have to watch your back anymore. And it's a great feeling to have a friend that used to be an enemy, you know. It wasn't the only time I ever made amends twice, and because there's an exception to that. But that was the only time I ever made amends twice to the same person for the same thing. I would have avoided that if I ran it by a sponsor or a trusted person first, and that's the reason I run all my amends before I make them. I always run them by somebody else. Usually it's my sponsor, sometimes it's my bride, sometimes it's a trusted person, sometimes it's a sponsee. Now, eventually I got another sponsor, and I told my second sponsor about this, and that would have been avoided had I talked to a sponsor or a trusted friend before I made the amends. So I guess I don't like to give advice, but I'll tell you what, if you're your own sponsor, put it this way, if I'm my own sponsor, I'm in trouble, because I got a real idiot running the show, you know, and I don't need to be my own sponsor. That wouldn't have happened in the first place. And my sponsor at the time, this was my second sponsor, Gallagher, I was the only one in Crawford County that liked him. He said, if you steal chickens, you'd better have some chickens with you when you make amends, if the amends requires restitution. And now, when I make amends that requires restitution, I always have chickens with me. I'm going to make the restitution. Actually, I never stole a chicken. Not that I wouldn't have. It just didn't occur to me, you know. But I always consult with a trusted person. Now, I said I never made amends twice to the same person. I'm going to almost contradict what I just said here. There's another category, and this is relationships and past relationships. And this is my opinion, and you can just let it go because I don't know this, but I don't really think it matters if you're a man, a woman, straight, gay. If you owe amends for harm or resentment, as I did in a relationship, put it this way, before I make amends to anybody that I have ever been in a relationship with, I need to be very aware. And I also need to be beware. I have to beware. Because I feel it's imperative that I do a fourth and fifth step first and then discuss it in detail with my sponsor or another trusted service before I make amends. And I got a couple reasons written down here. Number one, in all my past relationships, they've all moved on as I did. Some of them I don't know where they moved on to or who they're with. And really, it's none of my business. But I never want to do more harm in their current relationship just to relieve my conscience. I don't want to harm them, or I don't want to harm the man they're in a relationship with either. I don't want to do any more. And it says, except when to do so or injure them or others. Remember the sitcom, Two and a Half Men? Uncle Charlie, he got this, and the writer that wrote this, probably both of them need to burn in hell, because Charlie started making amends to his past relationships, you know, and he started getting laid again, you know, and he thought it was pretty neat to the women from his past. And just personally, I think he needs to burn in hell for that. Because the thing is, that's not the point of making amends. That's very selfish. The guy that wrote it needs to, too. And the thing is, put it this way, and this is advice, don't do that. I'll repeat it, and I got this in big bold letters with exclamation marks. Don't do that, you know. We have to remember part of step 9 says, except when to do so would injure them and others. And there are many times in time more will be revealed. You have these bubble pops, and you think of something else you did to that person. I let it go. And I advise with my sponsees, if there's more to it, instead of going back and making amends again, let it go. For one, I don't want to pick the scab. I don't want to reopen their pain, and they probably don't wish or need to keep hearing from me again. If there's more to be revealed, and I have to talk about it, that's why I have a sponsor. I can talk about it with them, and I can even write the letter, but I don't read it to it or give it to them, because the people in relationships, there was a reason we broke up, and I was always part of that reason. Now, so I don't go back in relationships. Now, here's where the contradiction comes that I talked about. There are exceptions to this, but I reserve those exceptions for my close, loving relationships with my children, my bride, and my parents. When I get a memory bubble of something wrong I did to my children or my parents, I go make amends. Okay? and I'm going to share one with you that I made 2 years ago on January 2nd. But anyway, when something from my past is revealed, because I don't know if me not making amends continues to hurt them, if it continues to be a thorn in their side. So I want to go and look them in the eye the best I can and make amends. One of the things I want to say here, I think, man or woman, we all have some macho thinking because we all have egos. And I just want to say this publicly. I don't think it's unmanly. I think it takes a lot of courage to look somebody in the eye and make sincere amends where you say, I was wrong and I'm sorry. And I'd like to fix this the best I can. I don't think that's unmanly at all. I think that's important. And one of the things with my kids, and especially my kids, and my parents are both deceased, they have been for years, but even with them, is I want to get closer. You know, I have a loving relationship with them. I want to make it stronger. And step 9 does this. I've seen it happen. Some of the amends to my children were for not keeping promises. The last line in all my amends now is what I learned from that rich lady that the Spirit prompted me. I now do my best to keep my promises, not only to my kids, but anybody that I make amends to. I would like to share an amends that I made to my dad, and it's dated January 2nd, 2016. On January 2nd, 2016, it was my dad's 102nd birthday. It was 2 years ago. And he passed away from my sight when he was 81. And I've done this with several people that are deceased. I wrote this letter, and I'm going to read it. This is copied right from the letter that I wrote. But the one that I wrote to him, I burned it for him. I went out, I got a wood shop, and my dad used to build boats. And I have a picture of me when I was about 4 standing there, and he's building a boat. And I inherited all his tools, and I don't use them anymore because they're kind of antique. So I got them on the walls of the shop and everything around. And it was his birthday, 2nd of January, and I went out. I don't know if I could do this in front of Elliot. And he dropped out of my sight when he was 81 years old. I went to the wood shop. I could feel his spirit as I read this amends. And this is exactly what I said. Dad, when I was growing up, I rebelled against your guidance. I was selfish, self-seeking, inconsiderate, ungrateful, rebellious, and defiant. I now see that you were only trying to protect me. I see things different now, and I wish I would have known then what I know now. I also wish I could have told you this when I could see you. I realize that I can no longer hear you, but you can hear me as I wish to let you know that I learned my lesson. In the future, I will do my best to keep my defects of character from controlling my behavior. Thank you for protecting me. I love you. Now, I read that and I burned it and I felt he heard me. And I that last sentence, in the future, I will do my best to keep my defects from controlling my behavior. That's the contract. That is what... I'll get to that later. I want to mention something else first. Notice the first... I did a 4-step on this incident with my dad before I made amends. I did a 4-step and I did a 5th step. And when I said I was selfish, self-seeking, inconsiderate, ungrateful, rebellious, and defiant, I'm naming the character defects that I came up with. I can't look at you, Jessica, because I'm going to do... Excuse me while me and Jessica go cry for a minute. Oh, I love her dearly. I didn't hug her tonight. I came in late and I had to pee. I owe you an amends. And there's Marion beside her. I love to hug both those ladies. They are quite the lady. But anyway, I named my character defects. In that last sentence, as I mentioned, my character defects that caused me to do that. And then the contract was the last sentence. I will do my best to keep my defects from controlling my behavior. In the future, I will do my best to keep my defects from controlling my behavior. I believe that single sentence is another, and I bolded this, it's a very, very precious gift from step 9. Because that sentence is a contract that changes the way I do business with the world. Ongoing. Yeah, I have an ego, and I get pissed off, and I revert back. But that's why we have these 12 steps. When I revert back, and next week I'm going to talk about step 10. And the thing is, that's step 9, okay? And the thing is, the promises come right after step 9. The 12 promises. Somebody said if you don't, I just heard this recently, if you want to brush up on the promises, Saturday morning over at 9 o'clock over here at I think it's the Presbyterian Church. Yeah, we have a promises meeting, very powerful meeting, my favorite meeting of the week. But now we get the promises, and I would like to bring attention to two words that aren't really talked about much in the promises meeting, but at the end are these extravagant promises, and people say, we think not, the whole group. And then it says, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, and these are the two words, they will always materialize if we work for them. Not they might materialize, not they should, not sometimes will, they will always materialize if we work for them. And they aren't really a gift because we have to work for them. But the thing is, the first 9 steps is the work we have to do. I'm done. We got 9 minutes this for questions. Huh? You got to move. Oh, okay.
Are there any questions?
Thanks, Jim.
Jim, alcoholic.
Hi, Jim.
All right, Buzz. Amends and restitution, money. I think a lot of us come into here with some owing some people some money. I know I did. My sponsor's here, his sponsor's here. So this question isn't so that I can look for an easier way of getting around doing anything, but a lot of money, all right? I owed somebody a lot of money. And I did write them a letter and set a time and a date to meet with them to make this amends. And I'm pretty sure my sponsor read that letter. I then met with them. The amends is ongoing. Okay, it was a lot of money. The fact that they were family, I think, made it a little bit easier. But because it was so much, and it wasn't something that I could just like save up.
Yeah, just
before before I made the amends. If that were the case, if I were just trying to save up that money until I had it all to make the amends to them, I would not be able to go to their house on Christmas like I just did, and on Thanksgiving like I just did. and look them in the eye and give them hugs and tell them I love them and be comfortable. So that amends on my part was done. But so the reason for this is for, you know, anyone else here in this room or anybody sponsoring somebody that may run across this. And I just picked financial amends because it can be tough. It's hard to talk about. I know I don't want to admit that I screwed up and I borrowed and I didn't pay back. But, so if somebody's been sober for a little bit, they have that amends. They know they need to make it, whether it be a creditor, a friend, a family member. What do you think about that?
I haven't had amends, monetary amends, that I couldn't get up the money to make it where I owed so much. So I have no personal experience to share with you there. But I would say, you know, that I think we all have that little voice deep inside of us. And, you know, one of the things we say is do the next right thing. And they talk about this in the literature. I know Sandy Beach talks about making payments. I know I owed a bunch of money to the state when I got sober, and I talked it over with my sponsor about the money, and it wasn't really amends because the state, they don't give a shit why you did it. It's you pay them back and they put you in jail. And I didn't have the money, and he said, do this, make payments until you have the money to pay them. And I started making payments every week out of my paycheck, and I never did get the money saved up to pay them, but I was probably 3 or 4 years sober, and the debt was gone. And it was kind of nice because I didn't have to worry about, you know, a constable coming saying, hey, I need this much money or you're coming with me. I had one do that once when I was drinking because over a parking ticket, and I went into the town tavern and borrowed it off the bartender so I didn't have to go to jail, and then I got drunk. But I don't know why I added that. Does that answer your question? I think you got to do, you know, actually, I did this with Joe. I told him to do something, and I called him back, and I said, Joe, forget what I said. You got to do what you got to do to feel okay about it. And I think that's the thing. We all know what the right thing is. We know the difference between right and wrong, or you wouldn't be sitting on a chair in here if you didn't. And that little voice inside you, some people call it your conscience, some people call it intuition, some people call it the Holy Spirit. I don't know, maybe it's, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's your soul. But we all have that little voice that tells you what to do. And sometimes I confront my sponsees like that because they say they want some advice. I say, you know, and they say, no, I don't. I say, yeah, you do, because that little voice usually don't lie to you. You know? Does that help you, Jim?
Yeah. Okay. Actually, I mean, I followed my sponsor's direction and it worked out.
There you are.
This was really my question, was the benefit. Anybody else?
Oh yeah.
Maybe might be in that position. Hasn't talked about it.
I think we're all in kind of a similar position. You know, we all have the same story. We have different details. I remember the first time I heard Sister Stephanie lead. I was sober about 6 months, and I thought, "What in hell do I have in common with a Roman Catholic nun?" And but we had a lot in common once she started giving a lead. I mean, she did bizarre things, just not as bizarre as I did, but the same reason. I shouldn't be taking her inventory. If she was here, I'd say that. God, I love her. You know. Other questions? 2 minutes.
Oh, you got to take her.
I'm Pam, and I'm an alcoholic.
Pam?
I just wondered what happened to your relationship with your mother. Was she ever able to forgive you for embarrassing her? Or?
Oh, yeah. I have another amends that I need to make. And I think I'm going to wait till Mother's Day to make it. Because she would be... I'm not good at math. But she'd be like 102 last year. And she's gone. She died when she was 88. And I have another amends. But yeah, I think the people that I love the most, if they haven't forgiven me, I don't know about it. And I feel forgiven. But I've made a lot of amends. And this amends that I'm making, actually, I'll tell you what it was. When I started, my first drug that I got addicted to was nicotine. And cigarettes were 31 cents a pack. And I was just a young kid. I hadn't drank yet. And she used to keep quarters in a jewelry box. And I started making God boxes for all my sponsees and other people and giving them to them. The same as her jewelry box. Well, she'd keep those quarters in that jewelry box. And I used to snitch a couple of them. I used to steal them to buy cigarettes with. Now, I don't know if she ever knew that. She probably did. But she never confronted me with it. And I don't feel right about the amends. But I just want to save it till Mother's Day. And I'm going to do the same. I've made other amends to Mom and Dad the same way. You know, a lot of times people say I can't make amends to somebody that has died. Yeah, you can. You know. And I'll tell you what. When you make it, and you burn that letter, you know they read it. They knew. They heard you. I don't know how you know that.
All right.
I guess we're done. Thank you.
What's that?